and welcome to a fresh, brand new Blue Sky Week here on Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here at this time, as we're here every day, Monday through Friday, to talk about life, the universe, and everything from a Catholic perspective. And it being Monday, today my co-host is Simca Fisher. You there, Simca?
Hey, Mark. How's it going?
I'm going, things are going well. I had a lovely morning. This past weekend was Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. Mother's Day is that, especially with the Feast of the Ascension, Mother's Day is that day when priests get to either talk about the Ascension and then have parishioners chew them out because they didn't mention Mother's Day, or talk about Mother's Day and then have parishioners chew them out because they didn't talk about the Ascension. So, you know, that's...
They didn't have that problem because nobody is there because it was graduation day. They were all off at the graduation at the
time. Oh, okay. So it was just like you and your kids.
Yep. I wish it was my daughter's first communion because last week, if you'll recall, I so delicately mentioned last week we were all throwing up instead of having her first communion. So it actually worked out fantastic for us because we moved it to this week, and that meant that all our family was in town for my niece's graduation. So everybody came, and we had a big, huge, six out of my eight siblings were there, which almost never happens, and it was fantastic because we're spread out around the country. And cousins galore, everybody brought food. The sun came out, and we're dogs, and they liked each other, and it couldn't have been any better. It was just fantastic.
Ask for anything more.
Really, really delightful.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful! That just sounds glorious. We had ours was pretty low key because the thing is my wife Janet and her younger sister Kathleen got this gift from Kathleen's kids. Kathleen's been really going through the ringer. Her husband has cancer and has been going through the treatments and all this stuff. And, you know, the outlook is good, but it's like been super grueling. Yeah. And they run like this fisheries business, and the catches have been iffy and weird this year. And so it's just like tons of pressure.
Yeah, yeah.
And so her parents, or her kids said, you need a special Mother's Day. So what they did was they connived and plotted and basically bought this all-expense-paid trip to Portland, Oregon.
Oh.
Which is about, I don't know, close to 200 miles south of where I live. And the plan was go stay in this ritzy hotel and get the massage at the nice thing where they put, you know, little rocks on your back and, you know, all that stuff, right? And then go to, here's this free tickets to this play. And it was just sort of Mother's Day pamperage for both Kathleen and for my wife, Janet. And so Jan was gone all weekend. She took off Friday evening. And so it was just me and our two younger guys being slobs. Well, you know, that's what you do, right?
Doesn't it?
The feminine presence is gone. We can just, you know, I don't care. McDonald's wrappers, you know, just laying around.
Why the living room. Wear pants anyway.
Yeah, I know. So, anyway, so it just turned out to be like a kind of slobby weekend for me. And I at one point, I went off and took a walk, and I decided I would splurge since we had no car. So the plan was walk up to the local parish, which is about a mile from my house. So I took a walk Saturday afternoon, and I looked at my watch and said, well, Mass is soon. So I just went to the vigil Mass. And then went down to there's like a Mexican restaurant down the street. And I went there. And so anyway, the long and the short of it was I wound up not having to like do anything on Sunday. It was like I just went to the kids and said, yeah, Mass is that way. Leave, you know, in a half an hour and you can get there and get to Mass because I've already been. So I'm just lounging around the house, you know. And so Jan didn't get home until late last night. And then we got up this morning and we both looked at each other and said, this seems like a nice morning for sitting out in the backyard and saying our morning prayers. And then what do you say we go over to there's a little town about 5 or 6 miles west of us that sits right on a bluff above Puget Sound. And it's just a spectacular day today. So the long and the short of it is that I know I probably should have been working this morning, but I just didn't, and I'm not sorry about that.
I have to admit, the whole time you're telling the story, I was like, doesn't he have to work?
Yeah, I do have to. I'm self-employed. I talked to my boss, and he said it was okay.
He said that he appreciates you, and he thinks you've been working too hard lately.
Yes,
It's
mark time. So basically, we walked around Edmonds and looked out over the Puget Sound and stopped and smelled the roses. Mm-hmm. I am not making that up, including the wild roses, which I don't know if you got wild roses in New Hampshire, but we got them out here, and man, do they smell great. That was how I spent my morning. And so that was kind of my Mother's Day thing for Jan, was like, let's go take a walk and hold hands and smell roses. And so it worked really well. So,
that's nice. That is.
Yeah. Awesome. So, well, it sounds like you had a fantastic Mother's Day then.
Oh, we sure did. Yeah. And it was just, you know, it was so nice because usually Mother's Day, it's so like you don't want it to be a big deal, and you don't want to feel upset if people don't do the things for you that they're hoping that they'll do for you. But you're surrounded by all these people who are, you know, they are being whisked off to spas and having hot stones put on their back and stuff. And yeah. I don't even want that, but I still somehow feel bad that nobody asks me whether or not I want it. You know what I mean? I want to be able to say no thank you to the hot stones. That's all I want. Is that so much to ask? But it was very nice because my family, you know, my husband made a wonderful breakfast with me. He went out to a special bakery and he got cream cheese and lox and fancy bagels, and he made me a nice breakfast. And the kids all had presents for me and they had cards for me and everything. And then I was too dang busy for the rest of the day to like worry about like, you know, where are my hot stones at this point, you know? Because we didn't know if it was such a crazy thing. Everybody's schedule kept on changing so much these past couple of weeks that we literally didn't know if we were going to have 3 or 17 guests or somewhere in between for lunch. So, and we ended up with, I think there was a total of 31 people over or something like that. I don't even know how many people ended up coming, but it was great. There was tons of food. I made a cake that turned out, you know, totally looked like a cake. And it was, cause one time I made a cake for, I think it was my first kid's baptism maybe. And it was supposed to be in the shape of a lamb. And okay. My baking skills are just not up to making cakes that are in the shape of, like, it was supposed to be a lamb that was sitting up, you know, like a 3-dimensional. And yeah, no, it didn't. It was no good. It was not a good thing. It was one of these, like, in the fevered imagination of famed horror writer, you know. It was supposed to be a beautiful, innocent, little, sweet, adorable, you know. Yeah, but it didn't.
There was a movie that came out a few years back from Icon Productions, Mel Gibson's productions, called Black Sheep. And it was the trailer for it is so funny. It's about some, you know, weird genetic experimentation project going on in New Zealand somewhere that has transformed sheep into just like monstrous killers. It was so funny. Oh yeah!
Wow.
Yes.
Boy, that yes. Because that's the production company that put out The Passion of the Christ. So right. I guess they're branching out.
I guess it was just I don't know. It was just somebody's little indie film. I often wondered what became of it.
Yeah.
And it was just like okay. That was weird, but yeah, if you go online and look for Black Sheep and, you know, maybe horror film or something like that, it was one of those horror films that was like, didn't take itself all that seriously. So,
okay. All right. Well, that's good.
Sort of like Cabin in the Woods, also, very funny and probably the bloodiest film I think I've ever seen in my whole life.
Is that Night Shyamalan, however you say his name? Is that what
it is? No, Cabin in the Woods was written by Joss Whedon. And it was his, it was his affectionate, salute to, the genre horror film that where you've got, you know, the snobby cheerleader and the big handsome jock and the goofball and the girl that nobody looks at. And I forget some other character, and they all go to visit the cabin in the woods, which, turns out to be a place where terrible, terrible things happen. Yeah. But, it was at the same time, it was hilariously funny. So it seems to be one of these things that he made when he had like 3 weeks free between making the Avengers movie and, you know, whatever the next Avengers movie was. So, odd little movie, but not something that you should ever, ever, ever watch with kids around. 'Cause man, was it gruesome.
Oh boy.
But it was like so over the top gruesome that even that was kind of funny after a while. Yeah.
Like in, what's it called? Shaun of the Dead. How would you compare it to Shaun of the Dead?
Oh, far more gruesome than Shaun of the Dead. But, okay. Yeah. But we'll be back right after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here with Simca Fisher. And I were going to make a slight divergence into discussion of horror when we return.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Simca Fisher. By the way, we were talking a little bit about horror movies because of that hilarious Black Sheep film that Mel Gibson's studio put out a few years ago, as well as Cabin in the Woods and, you know, lots of other horror movies out there. Since this is a show about life, the universe, and everything from a Catholic perspective, I thought it would be a little helpful to discuss the place of horror literature. There is a real place for that. In a lot of ways, you could call something like, for example, Macbeth. You could call Macbeth a horror story. It's got witches and everything. Plus, you know, it winds up with everyone dead.
I've seen some pretty bloody productions of it, too. I've seen Macbeth so many times, and I can't even say why. I've probably seen 8 productions of Macbeth, and they're all... It's not a subtle play.
Not a happy story. I read a very interesting piece by Stephen King, of all people, who is, of course, he's kind of the guy that is a one-man horror industry dude here in the United States. And what's interesting about it is that Stephen King pointed out, he said that he saw himself as writing in the grand tradition of the New England Puritan preacher, which I thought was really interesting that he explicitly connected what he does with the Christian tradition and more than that with a particular strain within that tradition of New England Puritanism. And he pointed out, and this is something Mike Aquilina pointed out to me too. A lot of our listeners are probably familiar with Mike Aquilina, a Catholic writer, just a wonderful, wonderful human being too. And he said that... the word monster is rooted in the same word from which we get demonstrate. And by the way, monstrance.
Mm.
And the point of all of those words is that the purpose of a monster, like the purpose of a monstrance, is to show something to us.
Uh-huh.
What a monstrance shows us, of course, is Christ fully present in the Eucharist. How do we decorate our monstrances? Well, we put, you know, the rays of the sun on it, for example. And the whole point is that you're looking directly into the light of God himself. You're seeing in that blank white disc, you are nonetheless seeing with the eyes of faith Christ fully present and being shown to you, demonstrated to you. Mm-hmm. What a monster does for us is he is also something who shows us something. Mm-hmm. He shows us the face of evil. He shows us at his best. What a monster, of course, does is he shows us the truth about ourselves,
right,
in our sinfulness. Right. So the real monster, for example, in Frankenstein is Dr. Frankenstein. The monster reflects back to him who he is. The monster is what it is because Dr. Frankenstein made him that. Not merely brought him to life, because he was brought to life in the book, not as a grunting monster, but as kind of a blank slate, and in fact reaches out to Frankenstein looking for love, as any child does.
Right.
And Frankenstein rejects him. And so through the evil that Frankenstein does to the creature, that creature is indeed made in his image and likeness. And so reflects back to him in murder and vengeance and so forth, the evil that he's done. That's the point of that book, is to show us that the real monster was Dr. Frankenstein, not the creature that he created. And that's what monsters do, and that's what horror at its best is supposed to do. Horror is meant to show us our own capacity for evil. So there's a real Christian purpose in the horror genre. Even when it's distorted as anything can be, as any work of art can be. Mm-hmm. But it's a creation of Christian imagination in many ways. So I thought that was interesting. A lot of Catholics are
Shaun the Sheep. Listen to me, Shaun, a little bit more engaged.
Now you're Shaun, frightening me. You don't say that.
I was just thinking about the opening of that movie. You know, it's a zombie movie. It's a movie where the zombies come and take over the city, and they have to fight together. And the very first scene in that movie is him. You see his feet shuffling, and you see this sort of lurching walk that he's doing as he walks across his house, and you see him opening his mouth, and this horrible sound emerges from it, and then you realize he's yawning and he's just waking up, and that's but it's not just a joke, because that was kind of the problem. He was not. Uh-huh. Wasn't fully engaged in his life. He was kind of walking through his life like a zombie, and that's what he, as he, you know, rescued his friends and rescued his family and his parents, and he tries to rescue his parents. He has to be rescued himself out of his, you know, self-made zombie infection that he's and that's how, you know. And of course, I mean, it's not too terribly profound. It's a very good movie. I like that movie a lot. But it's pure entertainment too, as well as having a little bit of something on its mind.
that movie was first shown to me by the late, lamented, dearly departed Father Shane Tharp of Oklahoma. I went down to speak at his parish, and we had some time to kill one evening, and he said, "I can't let you leave without showing you Shaun of the Dead." So he did, and it killed me. It was so funny. And I love everything that Simon Pegg does. If you ever get a chance to see The World's End, that's also really, really funny.
Like that movie, we actually watched it, and I was pretty sorely disappointed. That's the one where they're going to go through and hit all the different bars. Like it's going to take them, right?
Right. They're going through, and then they wind up becoming involved in a giant alien conspiracy to do something awful.
I want to like that movie. I really, really wanted to like that movie, but I felt like they didn't really get it together. I don't know. Give it another time. Anyway.
That's really, we've caught up on our week, and things are going well, you know. I went to Ascension Thursday, and it was like not Ascension Thursday in this diocese, so it was just like they just did whatever other readings, they just kind of ordinary time reading thingies for Ascension Thursday. So I was like, I'm always happy for any mass that I get to go to. So I was like, okay, I can roll with that. Whatever the bishops are doing, I don't care. There was little memes going around saying, you know, Jesus is ascending today in these states, right? He'll be ascending on Sunday in all these other states, you know? And it's like, I think all of that kind of, you know, the sort of little judgment calls that bishops make here and there about stuff. So much of that just I find hilarious.
Yes, me too. I don't worry
about it.
Is alligator meat? And is, you know, does muskrat count as meat? Yeah. Or not?
Capybara are fish. Yeah. Okay, whatever, you know. So yeah, well, we did the thing for a while, you know, after they like did the reform of the liturgy. My whole approach to the liturgy has always been just give me my lines and my blocking. I'll just do whatever. Just tell me what to say. I'll do it. And tell me when to stand up and sit down. I'll do all that. I don't care. Just tell me what to do. So they did the thing where the bishops decided at some point, for some reason that still eludes me, that when you come back from communion, then everybody should stand. Because we want to have this united gesture, and if people going up to communion are standing, but everybody in the pews is kneeling, somehow something terrible is happening because of that. And I was like, so we're all supposed to stand. Okay, fine, I'll stand. So I stood, and then other people were complaining because I'm old and my hips are and my knees are blah, and I need to sit or kneel or something. And so then the bishops like said, you don't have to, we would like it if you could stand if you want to, but if for some reason you don't want to, then you don't have to. So then we wound up like with just like this whole sanctuary that's just full of like people kneeling and other Johnny jump ups who are popping up and people who are like not sure what to do because the guy next to them is about it, no doubt. Yeah, and they're all like looking at each other, and then you've got like the liturgy cops who are like keeping a hawk eye on people to see if they're kneeling or to see if they're standing, and then there's other people who are like feeling super intimidated, so they don't know whether to stand or kneel, so they stand for a while and then they feel awkward and weird, so they kneel. And it was like a complete backfire on what the, you know, this unity that the bishops were trying to do. And I was like, I think all of that is hilarious. So now I just like, I kneel because that's what I always like doing anyway.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So we'll be back right after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. And we will be back with Simca Fisher right after this.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
And welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm still Mark Shea, and Simca Fisher is still the female Simca Fisher.
Indeed.
Yes.
Know which bathroom to use because I am the female Simca Fisher.
Somebody said on your wall that you were the female Mark Shea. I
I can't think tell.
That was meant to be an insult. I felt highly complimented.
Yeah, I bet you did.
So it's just like, that works for me, you know, so sucks to be you, but you're stuck being me, but I get the... I
can deal with it. I'm that good.
I get the reflected glory of being you, so that's good. Well, you know, we got people writing in on various questions. Somebody wanted to know about First Holy Communions. You're the expert here, so I'm just going to let you talk about that, because you just had one of them.
We sure did, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the thing that I've learned about First Holy Communion is that when I think about it, I'm 41 years old, and I'm just starting to catch on to what the whole thing is. So if you're preparing your child for their First Holy Communion, and you feel that your child is not completely ready, of course they're not completely ready. They're receiving Jesus' body, blood, soul, and divinity. They're not going to be ready. They're not going to have it all down pat. So this is, you know, probably a message I should have sent out a few weeks ago, but honest to goodness, I mean, I know a lot of parents are kind of wringing their hands over how poorly they've prepared their children. And you know, there's a reason that we get to receive him every single week, you know, or more often if we're lucky, if we're able to go to daily mass. You know, it's something that you can sort of learn as you go. And obviously, you know, you make your best effort to be as prepared as you possibly can and as reverent as you possibly can, and to teach your children to do the same. But it's the kind of thing that, not to be flippant about it, but it grows on you.
Yeah.
It really, really grows on you. So it's okay. As long as your kids have the basic general rudiments of what's happening, it's okay if they're not. You know, don't despair if you feel like your kids aren't completely with the program. That's the main thing I have to say about that. Also, if your child has a veil, and if you have a bunch of flowers and you have a sort of a vague plan of attaching the flowers onto the veil, you may want to like get more of a plan than that before the very last minute. You don't need to ask me how I know about this, but I may have ended up just hot gluing some roses onto my kid's head, basically. like there.
But that's
she looked very, yeah, very beautiful, and she didn't trip or anything. My one of my kids was in a whole class full of kids, so I wasn't there with him. He went up with the group, and he was so confused and so flaky about the whole thing that he went up, received communion, walked around the pews, got in his pew, got back in line, received communion again, and went and sat down. And we're like, okay, that's enough now. You can stop. He didn't know what was going on. you bring them up, they're at the age of reason, but that doesn't mean, I mean, that's just kind of like a bare minimum, the age of reason right there. It doesn't mean very much more than that.
That's good.
So, yeah, First Communion, just,
you know,
relax and be happy and keep on teaching them. It's not a deadline. You know, you don't have to stop teaching them about it just because they received their First Communion. So that's how I look at it.
Years ago, there's a rather famous in evangelical circles convert to Orthodoxy, Frankie Schaefer. So the son of Frank Schaefer, who was a big noise in evangelical circles and so forth. And anyway, he became Orthodox, and he came to Seattle one time, gave some talk. And I went and heard him. And he said at one point, the priest that was giving him his instruction to become Orthodox was talking about how the Orthodox would baptize and confirm and give communion to infants.
Yeah.
And Schaefer said he was talking to this priest, and he said to the priest, why on earth would you give communion to infants when they don't know what the Eucharist is? And the priest, in the best Eastern Orthodox tradition, turned to him and said, do you?
That's a very good point.
Okay, I guess, yeah, you know, come to think of it, I mean, I don't know what the Eucharist is. It's a profound mystery, you know. Yeah. And I thought that was a very profound remark. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
I don't know, in the East, in the like the Byzantine tradition, do the Eastern rites of the church give Eucharist to infants, like in the Maronite, right? I don't know.
I used to know these things. I don't know anything anymore. I don't know.
If you are out there in radio land and you know the answer to that question, give us a call at 1-573-4-BREAD-4. Feel free to give us a call and enlighten us on that point. 1-573-4-BREAD-4. You can also tweet us at Breadbox Media. So let's see. Where were we? We were looking down your list of questions.
Okay, let's see.
Someone wants to talk about pants and dancing. Dancing in pants. Oh, the scandal.
Yeah.
It's only a scandal for males with control issues. It's really not a scandal for anybody else. And then, except maybe yoga pants, but not for scandalous reasons. More for like, good Lord, stop it reasons. yoga pants. So, yeah, I was seeing something today. These things cross my email. You know, the question is about, is it a sin to practice yoga? And there are people who are like super passionate about this. Mm-hmm. Yoga. And my attitude is, well, what do you mean by yoga? Do you mean exercise positions?
Right.
Because no. I mean, or do you mean, you know, like the whole, you know, Eastern Hindu spirituality thing that goes with yoga for some people? Well, no, don't pray to gods other than the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But you know, if you just like sitting in a lotus position, knock yourself out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
where the confusion, I kind of have a little bit of sympathy for this. I know people like to laugh about it, but then there, you know, there are people who will say like, why should we worry about playing with a Ouija board? Because after all, we're just doing it as a game. Our intentions are just to do it as a game. And as you and I both know, Mark, you don't use a Ouija board just even if you're playing it as a game because it, you know, it gives an opportunity. So I think that's what people have in mind when they're saying is, could you, even if I intend it to be just exercise, what if I get into these positions which were designed to be, you know, worshiping Hindu gods or something like that? And the answer to that is, those positions were not invented to worship Hindu gods. That's basically an urban legend. And if you what we do as yoga, even if we're doing it strictly as exercise, I think we can agree that the like spiritual meditative practices of it ought to be off limits for Catholics.
Of course.
Catholic, we have our own tradition of meditation, and when we're praying, right, we're praying to the one true God, and we don't, that's not something that you mess around with. But as far as the, you know, putting your body in certain positions, whether you mean them to be worship or not, even if you were putting your body in those positions, the fact is that those positions never actually were intended to be worship of Hindu gods. So you're completely 100% in the clear when you do these things. There, it is just exercise. That's all it is.
This is very much,
yeah, go ahead.
This is very much like the problem that plagued early just Jewish Christian converts of tender conscience, the question of whether or not to eat meat that had been sacrificed to idols. Because if you went to a meat market in an urban area like Corinth, the meat that you got, there was no Safeway store, and there was not a big agribusiness. What there were local cultic shrines to various pagan gods, and that's where that meat came from. So they sacrificed a bull to Apollo, and then sold off the meat, because that was part of the way that you kept the shrine going. You sold the meat at market. And so Jewish Christians sometimes felt guilty for eating the meat. Am I somehow participating in the worship of the God by eating the meat? And Paul says, don't worry about it. Give thanks to God for this. God made the cow. So, you know, say grace over your meal, thank God for your meal, and then enjoy your steak. But if the person that you're sitting next to feels as though by eating they would be violating their conscience, then don't tempt them to violate their conscience. And so Paul has this very sensible approach, and that would be my approach to yoga as well. It's like,
I have to say, if that's the analogy, then what it really, the equivalent for yoga would be not that you're eating meat that was intended for a pagan shrine, but that you're eating meat that just happened to be prepared by a Hindu or something like that. Like, it's not, it's not even that the connection is really much more tenuous than that, because the positions that people do when they're in a yoga studio are actually fairly modern. People don't realize that. They think that there's some kind of ancient religious practice, and they're not. They're fairly recent. I'm going to have to look this up a little bit more, but as last that I heard from somebody that I trust, it's not what people think it is, whether they think it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just not what they think it is. It really is just basically exercise, and that's all it ever was.
Well, it's funny, there's a lot of like stuff that's like new vintage quote unquote spirituals, like Wicca. Yeah. Wicca's like 50 years old, We'll be back right after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we're talking with Simca Fisher today, and we'll be back in just a jiffy.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
And welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here with Simca Fisher. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-573-4-BREAD-4, 1-573-4-BREAD-4. Or you can text us at that number. You can tweet us at Breadbox Media. Listener Rachel wanted to know about what we thought of Justin Bieber's new cross tattoo on his face. I mostly think that there should be some kind of laws protecting child stars from what seems to be a pattern of craziness. The worst thing that I could possibly imagine visiting on my children would be child stardom.
Yes.
Just a horrifying thought.
Goodness, even sometimes I have to, I tell myself now, don't put any more pictures of them on Facebook because they're starting to like it. So really doesn't do anything good to kids to be under the impression that everything that they do is interesting and everything that they do is being watched very carefully and is very, very important. It's not good for anybody, but especially for kids who are just starting to figure out, who they are and what their relation is to the world and everything.
Yeah.
It's what a recipe for disaster. I don't know how you could come out of it in one piece. I'm especially amazed when people who are performers themselves allow their children to get into the business. That just seems so awful. I don't know.
That's right. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird to watch, but... somebody else asked, wants to know about how strange it is that our entertainment is saturated with fake violence, so much violence, but all fake. What does it say about us? And then somebody else sort of piggybacks on that and says, what is the deal with our preoccupation with violence and morbid stuff? Is it some strange way of coping? I have some views here. It's not like it's anything new. All you have to do is, if you can find a performance of it, watch something like Titus Andronicus. We hear, the word Shakespeare, and we start thinking about august things, But Shakespeare, among other things, loved really gruesome violence. In his tragedies, really gruesome stuff happens sometimes. And even the ones that are, like, respectable. Like King Lear. Some guy gets his eyes gouged out in King Lear.
Yeah.
And, it's all supposed to happen on stage. And there's just lots of gruesome, horrible things happening. And we've always loved that kind of stuff. I mean, there's a part of us that it's not just that we're, you know, sick puppies who like the arena. There's also a real place for violence, I think, in theater and in film, because violence is part of our lives, and so it has to be part of our art as well. And of course, as Catholics, right at the center of our faith is just an unbelievably violent act of injustice, perpetrated against the most innocent person who ever lived. And so how do we talk about that? Well, one of the things that you find is that in addition to theater and the arts where it's portrayed, you also get ritualized portrayals of violence. So right at the center of the Mass is, in a very hidden way, is a ritualized portrayal of that violence. So there's always a crucifix present at the Mass, and there is also always what we call the fraction rite, where the host is broken. And the whole point of that fraction rite is to recall the crucifixion. That it's not merely Jesus raised and glorified that we're worshiping in the Mass. It's also Jesus broken on the cross.
But nobody is tempted to, you know, go to even more Masses and spend every day going to Mass so they can see that awesome part where the host is broken. I mean,
that's true.
I understand you're saying ritualized, but the fact that it's ritualized is extremely significant. I mean, it really scratches a different kind of itch for us, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, when I think, you talk about Shakespeare, you talk about the violence that's on stage in Shakespeare, but, you know, I mean, going back to ancient Greek plays, I mean, those were incredibly bloody and incredibly violent. Yep. Talk about, you know, gouging out eyes and all kinds of things. But the word obscene literally means off stage. That's what the word obscene means. When something is obscene, it was something that was considered too...
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's what it means. Obscene, not part of the scene, off stage.
Okay.
And that's what the word obscene means, is something that's not fit to be presented in public, that you shouldn't be just standing there looking at. And we usually use it for, you know, sexually graphic things, but it also, as far as I can recall from college, which was a long time ago, also referred to extremely graphic acts of violence, which would often happen off stage. And I think that, you know, I don't know what kind of TV shows you've been watching lately, but the things that they show and the kind of violence that they choose to include, I mean, gouging somebody's eyes out is pretty mild. That's something that you would see. It's not something that everybody would be talking about the next day on social media. That would be kind of run of the mill, you know? Yeah. And I think that you can't just say that it's like, well, this is part of human nature and this is how we choose to deal with it.
Oh, you know? No, that's not what I'm trying to say. I think that there is such a thing as obscene violence. And my own criteria for it is this violence that's calculated to inspire actual horror and revulsion, or is this violence that's calculated to inspire delectation? Yeah. I want to see more of this.
But that's the thing, because if you watch any kind of violence often enough, it will have the effect of making, you know, among certain people anyway, of making you want to see more, because you really can become, I sound like one of those moms now, but, you know, it really is true. Listen to your mother. If you watch enough of it, it's just like anything else. If you watch enough of it, you need to ratchet it up constantly.
Right. Yeah.
That's, you know, that is certainly... Yeah. It would be hard for me to imagine something which would be considered too shocking to be on, you know, HBO or something. And I watch these shows. I watch a lot of these very violent shows. I turn my head away because I don't want to see it. But it makes me... And it's not necessarily that I think that people are going to run right out and imitate what they see. You know, people aren't going to start doing the things that they see on I don't know, Daredevil and I don't know, various violent shows.
Game
I don't
of Thrones.
Necessarily. Yeah, it's not necessarily that people are going to imitate these things, although that does happen sometimes. But it's just that there are things that are not meant. That's not what our eyes are meant for, and that's not what our minds are meant for. just because
I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that. Yeah.
I don't know. So. Just something to feel terrible about, I guess. I have noticed that some shows, we've been watching Boardwalk Empire. We're in the third or fourth season. I forget which season. And that's a show that I know a lot of people don't handle it this way. When we watch shows, we will turn our heads away if there's a scene that we feel that we shouldn't see, either if it's very graphically violent or very sexually graphic. You know, and we'll continue to watch the show if it's good enough, if it has enough artistic merit.